The topic of the shiur today is withdrawing or withholding treatment for a terminally ill patient. Now, halacha requires us to save lives based on the pasuk of Lo Samen Adam Re'echa. It's found in Vayikra Yotes Tezayin. And the Rambam paskins in Hilchos Rotzeach Shmiras HaNafesh Perakah Falachi Adal Kol Yachol Lahatziv Lohitzel Over Al Lo Taman Adam Re'echa. That if you are able to save someone, you don't. You violate the prohibition of don't stand idly by the blood of your brother. And not only are we required to save someone's life in general, but the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos Perak Beis Lachol Yudches basically Gemara Yoma tells us that if debris falls on someone and you are required to remove the debris, even if yafshar shiyavri mafachim olav motzim osa l'chai osa shah, and even if he will fully recover, or it's impossible that he will fully recover, you can still clear the debris and you can take the person out of the rubble to enable him to live even for chayisha, even for momentary life. So regarding the obligation of lo samar adam re'echa, don't stand idly by, we have the opportunity to save someone, you must save someone, it's even for chayisha, even for momentary life. The Rambam also tells us that there is a prohibition to end the life of a goses, even someone who is in the process of dying. This is the Rambam Hilchos Rotzeach Shmiras HaNafesh Perek Beis Halacha Zayin, that Echad HaHorig HaSabori HaSachole HaNotelamos, even if you kill someone who's a deathly ill person, but Filo HaHorig HaSagoses, even if you kill a goses, Neragalav, you can be killed for this crime. So there is a prohibition to end the life of a goses. It's not exactly clear what the precise parameters of a goses are. Presumably it's probably around the last 72 hours of his life, but that could be a little bit debatable. But the point being is that when we deal with the obligation to continue someone's life at the end of his life, we're dealing with two halachic issues. One is lo samen adam re'echa, the affirmative obligation to save someone's life, based on the prohibition of standing idly by when someone could be saved by you, and the prohibition of ritzicha, of murdering someone, of killing someone. The Aruch HaShulchan and Siman Shin Lamates Seif Aleph explains that Avo Pishanu Roin Shemitzar Harbei Ksisasa V'Tovlo Hamavas, even if you see that someone is suffering at the end of his life, and death is better for him, Mikamakam Asur Lanu Lasos Davar Lakarv Misaso, nevertheless, we may not do anything to speed up his death. The world and all that's in it belong to God, and this is his will. So, pretty straightforward. Isser of Ritzicha, obligation of Lo Samar Adam Re'echa. However, there is a Gemara in Ksuvos Staff, Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph. There the Gemara tells us that it was the day that Rebbe died, Rebbe Nasi died, and the rabbis decreed a fast, and they daven for mercy. And the Gemara tells us that Salika Amse de Rabbi Leigra, so the maidservant of Rebbe went up to the roof, Amra El Yonim Vakshimus Rabbi, Vatachtonim Vakshimus Rebbe, he rats and Shiachufu Tachtonim Es El Yonim. She said the higher beings and the lower beings both want Rebbe, right? Shemayim wanted Rebbe, and the rabbis were praying for him. They also wanted Rebbe. They didn't want him to die. And she said, May it be Hashem's will that Hashem should agree to the request of the lowers, the lower beings. In other words, that the rabbis who are praying they should live, that their prayer should be answered. However, the Gemara continues, Kevin de Chaze kama zimne de ayala beis kisei, v'chalotz tefillin u'menach lehu v'kamitztayer. When she saw that how often Rebbe had to relieve himself and how painful it was for him to remove his tefillin and put them on again, he presumably wore his tefillin all day. So what did she say? Amar mihiratz shikafu al yonim v'les tachtonim. She said it should be God's will that the higher being's request is done. V'lo havushat ke rabbanim miboy rachmei. The chachamim continued to pray that Rebbe live. Shakla kuza shadje meigra la'ara. She took pottery and threw it to the ground. Ishtaku merachmei v'noch nafshid de Rebbe. The Chachamim stopped praying and Rebbe died. So what do we see from here? This Gemara tells us that the maidservant of Rebbe prayed for someone's death. And I guess her position was not criticized in the Gemara. Not only is her position of praying for someone to die not criticized in the Gemara, the Ran and Dharam Daf Mem and Aleph tells us very explicitly, Paskins like this Gemara, the Ran says, Pom Shetzarech Levakich Rachim Alachole Sheyamus. Sometimes you need to pray for the mercy for the patient to die. Such as where the patient is in great pain due to his illness and he cannot live. So the Ran, based on the Gemara and Ksuvos, is telling us that objectively, sometimes death seems to be better than life itself, and you would be allowed to pray for someone to die. Now, does this mean that the Ran would definitely hold that not only are you allowed to pray that someone should die, but you could also perhaps withhold treatment? So it would be psychologically difficult to say. On the one hand, you can pray that someone should die, but you have to do everything to save the person. But maybe that's a position. But if you look in the Ramah, in Yoredeia Hilchos Shin Lamites, in Halacha Simon Shin Lamites, Seif Aleph, the Ramah writes the following. V'chein aser ligum lemei she'emos mehera. You're not allowed to hasten someone to die. Someone is lying on his deathbed for a long time. You cannot remove his pillow or his cushion from beneath him. Saying that the feathers of a certain bird cause this. You also cannot move him from where he is. You're not allowed to place the keys to the synagogue under his head, so that his soul may depart. However, if there's something that hinders his soul's departure, so let's say, for example, there's a banging noise near the house, like a wood chopper, or there is salt on his tongue, and these hinder the departure of his soul. How the salt and the knocking hinders the departure of his soul. Maybe somehow he's sensory, he's moving, he's feeling, he's hearing, and so that's keeping him alive. Don't really know. But nevertheless, the Ramah writes, Mutil asir misham. It may be removed. So the salt may be removed, and the knocking may be stopped. Why? This is not involved in the action. It simply removes a hindrance to his death. Now, the Taz is bothered in Sifkat and Beis. Why does the Ramah allow removal of the salt from his tongue? Aren't you also moving his mouth? So therefore, the Taz writes, Al keinira lafinis daiti she'ein linhog heter basaros melech. Therefore, he writes that he thinks that you should not be allowed to remove the salt. The Shach disagrees. The Shach thinks in Sif Katan Zion, Da'acha Eina Isra Mishum Hanotzot El Isra Mipnei Shemisno Eya Hagoseis. He thinks that the issue is about moving the Goseis. The issue is moving. And moving the salt from the tongue is, you're not really moving the person, as opposed to moving the pillow or the cushions, you're going to be moving the person. So you're not going to move a Goseis. But removing the salt or removing the knocking, stopping the knocking, this is what's called Mesir Hamoneya, and that would be allowed. Again, how do you understand? It's a little bit of a discussion as to why you're not allowed to remove the cushions or removing the keys. There it seems like you're actively killing him. What these things do, some Mefarshim say maybe these are segulos, maybe. It seems that the distinction that Ramah is making is between those things that actively kill him and those things are simply preventing him from dying. And it seems, according to the Ramah, that you're allowed to withhold treatment. You're allowed to withhold the salt. You're allowed to remove the wood chopping. Question is, why are you allowed to do that? Isn't there an obligation of lo samot al dam re'acha? So to this, Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, he wrote in Moria, Tafshin Lamed Ches, he writes the following. He says, nirad shadin hatzala lo nemar el b'makom shenena hanitzol b'harachas yamav v'tov lo sheyarichu yamav. That the obligation of lo samal adam b'riecha, the obligation to save someone based on this pasuk, is only said in a situation where the one who is saved will benefit from a long life. V'tov lo sheyarichu yamav, it'll be good for you that you're lengthening your days. With this, there is a halacha of hatzala that you have to save the person. But in a situation where his death is better than life because of his suffering, or there's no purpose in him to live, he has no understanding at all. There is no halacha of hatzala. In other words, there seems to be a distinction, the way Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg understands the Ramah, that when it comes to ritzicha, when it comes to actively killing someone, you're never allowed to do that. Because we're not allowed to play God in this, when it comes to taking someone's life. Only God can take someone's life, with the exception of explicit Torah mandate, for example, the death penalty when the Torah allows it, or some other these circumstances. But you're never allowed to just take someone's life, even if he is having a miserable life. But maybe the obligation of lo samal adam b'riecha, the obligation of hatzala, of saving someone's life, that only applies when you are saving someone's life in a way that will be good for him. But when it's objectively not good for him, we can debate what that is, but when it's objectively not good for him, there's no mitzvah of lo samal adam b'riecha. That's the basis for the Ramah's position. And so we see, number one, it seems you have to save someone's life, you're not allowed to hasten someone's death, but then we have the Gemara in Ksuvos, we have the Rad in the Darim, we have the Ramah, which seems to indicate that maybe, that under some circumstances where it's better dead than alive, then it might be okay to pray for his death and even to withhold some treatment. Regarding withholding treatment, there are essentially three contemporary positions. So the first position is the Tzitz Eliezer. So first of all, generally we assume there's some, before we get to Tzitz Eliezer, there generally is a what's called a DNR, and there's a DNI. A DNR, which is a do not resuscitate order, so it indicates if the patient's heart stops beating, then the medical staff will not initiate CPR through chest compressions or a defibrillator, and a DNI basically states that if the patient stops breathing, the medical staff will not initiate artificial respiration by inserting a tube into the lungs, i.e. intubation, and then connecting that to a ventilator. So that's DNR and DNI. So the Tzitz Eliezer has one position. It can be found in Chelak Yudal Simon Pei, who basically says, Yesh chiyuv la'asos mamatzim, there's an obligation to engage in all efforts to save a goseis in any way possible to lengthen his life. And he says, even chayisha, even momentarily. So he says, you even have to engage in what we call heroics in order to save someone's life. He probably takes the halacha of the Gemara in Yoma and the Rambam, who says that you have to remove the debris for someone to save his life on Shabbos, even if it's chayisha. So what do you see from here? Even for temporary life, you have to save someone's life. Another proof for the Tzitz Eliezer is that the Gemara indicates that a woman who is required to drink the bitter water is a sota woman, and let's say she's guilty, she did not always die immediately. If she was guilty of an offense with which she was charged, but she had some other merit, the waters did not cause her to perish immediately, but instead produced a debilitating and degenerative state, which led to protracted termination of life. It added longevity, even though it was accompanied by pain and suffering, and this was deemed to be a privilege bestowed in recognition of her meritorious action. So she kept on living, this sota woman, and despite the fact that she was suffering, that was viewed as a good thing. The question, though, is what does the Tzitz Eliezer do with the Ramah? The Ramah says that you can withhold treatment. So he explains that the Ramah, ha hamadubar begosei shebaofen tivi ito kavar es lamuz. He says the Ramah was discussing a gosei who is in the process of dying. But there is something to yesh davar makiv zos, but there's something that prevents this. So lachain matir lahasyam es hamoneah. So we're talking about someone who's actively dying. If someone is a terminally ill patient and someone suffering, that's not what the Ramah is talking about. Now, there's a Tzitz Eliezer basically takes the view that yet maybe, based on the Gemara and Ksuvos, you can pray that someone should die, but you have to actively do what you can, lo sama dam riecha, do whatever you can to keep someone alive, because you have that responsibility, and even a life worth... even a life full of suffering is still better than death. That's the Tzitz Eliezer's position. Rabbi J.D. Bleich also supports that position. The middle view, which I think seems to be the dominant view, is that of Rav Moshe Feinstein, of Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And they say, if you look at the Gemara and Ksuvos, the Ran and the Darim, and the Ramah, it's obvious that you can and you should withhold treatment. The Rav Moshe Feinstein, Igros Moshe, Choshen Mishpat, Chelek Beis, Siman, Ayin Dalet, cites the Gemara in Ksuvos. He cites the Ran. And then he says, Upashit Shekein Sover HaRamah, Biyoridea Siman Shin Lamites, Seif Aleph, Shematir Vigam Matzrich, Lahasar Devarim HaMa'akvin Yitzias Anefesh. That the Ramah clearly holds that you are allowed and you even need to remove those things that can withhold someone's end of life. By the way, the Ramah doesn't say that, but it seems that the Rav Moshe believes that that's the hashkafa, that's the philosophy behind the Ramah. All the Ramah said was that it's permitted. The Rav Moshe feels that it's based on the principle of the Ran and the Gemara Ksuvos. It's better dead than alive in some difficult situation, so then you're doing a chesed for the person to withhold treatment to end their life and end their suffering quicker. The Rav Moshe says that it's matzrich lahasar dvar ma'akrim tzias nefesh ach she nimtza de gorbim sheyamus bezes man kodem kodem, that you can and you should remove those things with prevent death, even if it caused the person to die a little bit earlier. It's because of the suffering for this person. The veleka yisurim, that without the suffering, haleka shum to tam, sheyatiru af lesalek devarim hamaakim liyatzias nefesh. Without the suffering, there's no reason that Chazal would permit even the removal of those things which prevent his death. So Moshe requires the person to be in a terminally ill state and to be suffering. Essentially, there has to be an expert medical opinion as determined the patient is terminally ill and the patient is suffering a lot, even though he or she is receiving medication to control the pain. And presumably, Rav Moshe would also say that the patient does not want to undergo resuscitation. If the patient says, I still want to live and under these conditions, then we should engage in heroics. But to save him. But if he doesn't want to undergo these heroics, so you would be allowed to, and you'd be encouraged to not to engage in heroics under these circumstances. Again, terminally ill, patient is suffering very much, and the patient does not want to undergo resuscitation, or that's you believe that to be the case. At the same time, Ramosha writes that you have to provide basic maintenance. You have to provide, in the same tshuva, he says you have to provide nutrition, oxygen. There's some probably discussion as to what constitutes basic maintenance, but it's generally assumed to be nutrition and oxygen, artificial hydration, pain management, insulin for a diabetic, antibiotics as long as it's productive. And the rationale for Rav Moshe is that he says that if you don't give the patient oxygen, then it will cause him suffering. So you have to provide basic maintenance, because if you don't do that, then it will cause him to suffer. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach is cited in Nishmas Avraham, Shin Lamites, Seif Dalet, who gives a different reason. He says you can only withhold treatments that are causing suffering to the patient and are not standard treatments. You can't withhold treatments simply because they will prolong the life of the patient. Therefore, food and oxygen and antibiotics must be provided to the patient. It seems, though he doesn't say it explicitly, it seems that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orach may hold that if you don't provide the basic needs, that's considered indirect killing. In other words, he would read the Ramah when the Ramah says that you can withhold the salt or the knocking, so that however they believe that helped, that's referring to heroics, things that are unusual, but basic treatments, so that's if you don't do that, so that may be considered maybe some form of indirect killing. That's sort of the middle view. The case in Yoma, or the Gemara, or the Rambam, which says that you have to even extend someone's life for Chai Shah, for momentary life. So that's presumably, they would say, that's talking about when there will be less suffering for Chai Shah, or when the person asks you to remove the rubble. However, non-routine and painful treatments which do not cure the fundamental problem are withheld. So these are like the Ramah's cases of withholding the salt. So again, these are two different, the first two approaches. The first approach, you have to do everything, even heroics, to save the person, unless the person is actively dying. Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Bleich. The middle position, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Shlomo Zalman Orbach. No need for heroics, and perhaps you shouldn't engage in heroics when it's a situation, terminally ill patient, suffering, patient doesn't want it. But routine treatments or routine maintenance, you would be required to provide. Third approach is to say that you can even withhold food and drink. I think there are at least two different approaches to explain why you would be allowed to do that. So Rav Hershel Schachter is of the view that the view of patient autonomy in terminally ill situations. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, tells us, Ve'elu ve'elav hu nosei es nafsho. Literally it means, based in Devarim Chavdal Tezvav, for this he puts his life on the line. B'nei ma'ola ze ba'kevesh ve'nitla ba'ilo numaser es atzma l'misa lo al scharo. Why did this person climb the ramp, become suspended from the tree, and give his life over to death? Was it not for his wages? Meaning what? Meaning that sometimes we take jobs that are risky, but we're allowed to take certain risks with our life. And based on this, Rav Schachter, B'kvei Atzon, in the Sefer B'kvei Atzon, Siman Lama Dalad, describes three scenarios. He says one scenario where it's clear that everyone would want a certain treatment, then we have to give him the treatment based on Mishmartim Od L'Nafsho Sechem. And in a situation where it's clear that nobody would want the treatment, because let's say it's not a real treatment, and this person wants the treatment and just cause him greater suffering, we don't give him the treatment. Nobody would want the treatment. If it's umdana, it's presumed that nobody would want the treatment. But let's say it's a 50-50, not 50-50, but let's say there's no umdana one way or the other. There's no presumption one way or the other that there are people in the middle, that there are people who would want a certain treatment or who would not want this certain treatment. In that case, it depends on the individual himself. Rabbi Zev Shostak, in an article in Journal of Contemporary Halacha, Society, and in volume 22, page 84, in an article entitled Ethical Guidelines for Treatment of the Dying Elderly, he writes that Rav Hershel Schachter, Rabbi Chaskel Horowitz, the Vienna Rav, maintained that artificial nutrition and hydration are medical procedures which a terminal patient may direct to be withheld. Because once someone's in a state, he's terminally ill, so then he has patient autonomy to decide if it's something reasonable that a lot of people would not want. He can ask for it to be withheld, even food and drink. Rav Zal Nechemya Goldberg agrees to this as well for a different reason. He says that withholding the food and the medicine is like removing salt from the individual, the Ramah's case. And there's a motion, Rosh Shlomo Zalman say, they're removing the salt, that's like heroics. He says, no. In Halacha Urafua, Volume 2, essentially, he has an argument with Rabbi Levi Yitzhak Halperin, and he says essentially that the Ramah views that burning, let's say, food and medicine let's say if there was someone who didn't have food and he has and you have access to food and medicine, and if you burn that person's food or medicine, you're not considered a murderer. You're not an indirect murderer. You've only violated Lo Stam Al Dam Re'echa. So, in other words, if you tie someone up, let's say you tie someone up and you throw him in a room, you tie him up in a room where there's a lion, so you're an indirect murderer. You're causing him to die. But let's say the person's going to die if he doesn't have food, and you're just not, and you have food, and you destroy the food. So the person's going to die by himself. You have an opportunity to save him, and you don't, so you would only violate Lo Stam Al Dam Re'echa. However, for a goses, for whom death is better than life, or a terminally ill patient, there's no mitzvah of rescue, and therefore you can remove the salt to the knocking sound. And this is the same way to understand our situation. So that's sort of a third approach. In other words, he's saying that removing food, oxygen, or medicine from a patient is not considered gram ritzicha if the patient later dies from lacking these things. So that's a third approach. Rav Schachter is saying, terminally ill situation, and a person can make a decision where other people would also make the decision, patient autonomy. And Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg said, you can withhold even food or drink based on the fact that that is the case of the Ramah, that you're simply not saving the person, and there's no obligation to save a person when you feel it's better for him to die because he's suffering rather than live. Again, others disagree with Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, but these are the three different opinions. Heroics, Tzitz Eliezer. No heroics, but basic maintenance, Rav Shlomo Zalman Aruch from Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Hirsch Schachter, Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, you can even withhold food and drink, basic nutrition, from a terminally ill patient who is suffering tremendously. Now, are you allowed to remove someone from a ventilator? So there was poskim, perhaps most notably, it's a minority view, Rav Chaim David Alevi. He was a Sephardic chief rabbi in last century in Tel Aviv. He actually believes that you can remove someone from a ventilator. Why? And he writes this in the second volume of Tchumim. He believes that when the Ramah says that you can remove salt from the person's tongue, that is a perfect example of the ventilator. He writes, Barur shelo kasvani kol hanal tilavar din notos shebekar v'gargir melech. He said the Ramah, when he's talking about removing the pillows or the salt, he's not talking about a pillows and a salt. But he's really, what's he really saying? He said, I did not write all of this. He wrote a whole piece to clarify the laws of regarding feathers in a pillow or a grain of salt, but to tell you that the removing the salt from the tongue of the goses is perfectly analogous to artificial ventilation. He says that, because think about it, the person's going to die, and the ventilator is saving him, so you're removing what could potentially save the person. Permission to remove the grain of salt is agreed upon and obvious in the view of all authorities without dissent. And why is that? In the spar ikar tam, you're simply removing an obstruction. The same thing, the person on the ventilator, without the ventilator, he's going to die. So you're simply removing an obstruction by removing the ventilator. Now, most poskim, like I said, this is a minority view. Most poskim, almost all the poskim, disagree with Rav Chaim David Alevi. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Tzitz Eliezer, many poskim, almost all of them disagree. But it should be noted that this position is out there. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in Yoredei Chelek Gimel Siman Kuf Lamed Beis, he says that removing someone from a ventilator is considered killing the person. He says it's very clear. He says that you're not allowed to, if you don't know that the person's dead, and let's say he's in a coma, he says you can't remove the ventilator from him. You're going to be killing him. Moshe Feinstein views it as killing someone to remove him from the ventilator. And the Tzitz Eliezer in Chelek Yud Zayin, Siman Ayin Beis, explains the reason. He says it's based on a Yad Rama. Explains that, let's say the Yad Rama writes that in a situation where, let's say, a person tied, Reuven tied Shimon up, and then he diverted a flow of water upon him and he died. The Gemara says that the water is tantamount to his arrows. It's as if Reuven took an arrow and shot an arrow at Shimon that was effective in committing the murder. So let's say again, Reuven ties Shimon up, and there's dirt. There's a body of water, and there's dirt between the water and Shimon. And if Reuven removes the dirt, and therefore that separates Shimon from the water, so what's he doing? Immediately after he removes the dirt, he's immediately causing Shimon's death. That's considered murder. So by removing the ventilator immediately from the person, and that will cause his death, then that is called ritzicha, that is called murder. In a situation where it's not immediate, like if you're simply removing the salt, so presumably that's not immediately causing the person's death or removing the person from knocking. If immediately you remove something, and then he is right away, it's killing him, so that's considered death. So it would seem that the majority view is you have no options, even if someone's terminally ill, suffering, and they're connected to a ventilator. So the truth is there are instances when a ventilator may be withdrawn according to halacha. So there's a good book, Rabbi Jason Wiener wrote a good book entitled, he's a rabbi in Los Angeles, I think he's the chaplain of Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, in Los Angeles. He wrote a book called Jewish Guide to Practical Medical Decision Making. And he writes that he gives a list of situations where many poskim would allow you to remove someone from a ventilator, even according to many poskim. So the first could be if the patient is stable enough to breathe on his or her own. So let's say a patient can survive for some time after being extubated. So then they need not reintubate. Meaning what? Let's say the doctors know that if they extubate someone, he can live for a certain number of hours. So there's a debate. Is it the most lenient view is a few hours? According to the more stringent view, it's at least 48 hours. So if you believe that you can extubate someone and the person could be stable and breathe again, it could be for a number of hours or it could be 48 hours. And then after that, you see that he can't breathe on his own. So then when you're removing him from the ventilator, you're not killing him because he's okay now. He's alive now. He's breathing now on his own, even if he can only do that for a short period of time. So again, it's a debate, how many, is it a few hours or 48 hours? And then you would not be obligated to hook him up to the ventilator again if he's terminally ill and he's suffering tremendously. Removing him, you're not killing him if he could be alive for a number of hours. You're not killing him because he could still be alive for a long time. And then you would not be able, you would not be obligated to hook him back up based on no requirement of lo stam lo dam riecha if someone's terminally ill and suffering. Another possibility is, let's say you cannot extubate him successfully or safely. You can also gradually wean the patient from the ventilator or lower the settings. as long as it will not cause immediate instability or death. So, for example, if you lower the oxygen, now you don't have to completely extubate him, you can lower the oxygen up to a point where he is stable for a number of hours. Maybe again, a number of hours or for 48 hours, you lower the oxygen. You would not be required to up the oxygen level if he then gets worse and he needs more oxygen if he's terminally and he's suffering. So this is an in-between situation where, again, you're not removing the ventilator necessarily. You're just lowering the oxygen level such that he's still alive and he can still breathe on his own for a period of time, and you would not be required to re-up the oxygen level when, if he's terminally ill and he's suffering, if he can't breathe on his own. If the, for example, if it's time to service the ventilator, you can check whether the patient is breathing. If there is no sign of independent breathing, there is no obligation. There is no obligation to replace the ventilator. This is where Moshe Feinstein writes this in Yoredeya Chelek Gimel Siman Kuf Lamed Beis. Some poskim allow a timer, and some allow the person to remain intubated, but they allow certain medications, such as pressors, which are not considered routine basic maintenance, to run out, and then passively avoid refilling the IV bag. So there are different solutions. So just to summarize what we said in this year, we began by discussing that you're not allowed to hasten someone's death, even someone who's a ghost face. There's a prohibition of ritzicha, of murder, even for a ghost face. There's an obligation to try to save someone's life, and to even for chayisha, even temporarily, even for a short period of time. But then we saw the Gemara where the maidservant of Rebbe prayed for Rebbe to die, and that seemed to be an acceptable position. The Ran codifies this position, says this is the halacha. The Ramah says you can withhold the salt and the knocking, which seems to indicate that if someone's suffering tremendously, you can withhold treatment. We saw three different approaches, either to minimize the Ramah and saying, no, you can only, when someone's actively dying, so then you don't have to stop the death, but normally speaking, even if someone's suffering and they're terminally ill, you always have to do heroics. We saw the middle position of Moshe and Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who says no heroics, but basic maintenance is permitted. I'm sorry, the opposite. No heroics, but basic maintenance is obligated. And we saw Rav Shechter and Zalman Chaim Goldberg for different reasons, that even basic maintenance can be withheld if that's what the patient wants. Regarding removing the ventilator, even though there is a minority view that's saying that's just like withholding treatment and should be allowed, the dominant view is that's like killing the person. However, there could be times where if the patient could be stabilized by extubating him, by lowering the oxygen level, then that would be permitted if the person can be stable for a certain period of time and then not intubating or not re-upping the oxygen when it's necessary. And this is obviously very, very difficult situation, very difficult in both directions. You don't want to be the one to necessarily determine when to end someone's life. On the one hand, on the other hand, it might be a tremendous chesed to the person to end someone's life. And hopefully what we've provided today is a general overview of the different positions regarding withholding treatment and withdrawing treatment for someone who's a terminally ill patient.